Welcome to From Beneath the Hollywood Sign. If you love old movies, Hollywood history, or the golden age of filmmaking, you've come to the right place. This is the podcast that talks about amazing stories of Tinseltown from another era and fascinating conversations with writer-producer Steve Kubine and actress-writer Nan McNamara.
So, Steve, did Ava Gardner and Howard Hughes have a good relationship?
Well, they did, until he dislocated her jaw.
What?
Well, don't worry. She hit him back with an ashtray.
From Beneath the Hollywood Sign is the gin joint for you.
Hi, I'm Neil.
And I'm Ken.
And we are from the Triviality Podcast, a pub trivia-style game show where a lack of seriousness meets a little bit of knowledge.
Join us each week for an hour-long game of general knowledge trivia featuring special guests from around the world, plus tons of extra themed episodes.
If you want to improve your trivia game,
or you just want to scream at us in your car when we get easy questions wrong,
then we're the show for you. Find Triviality on all your favorite podcast apps.
But you know that, because you're already listening to a podcast.
Yep, bim up. Welcome everyone to the Film Vault. That's Anderson. I'm Brian Bishop, your host for today. Just occurred to me, Anderson, we have two films to talk about, starring It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia alums. One very good, one not as good. We'll get into that in a second. Also, a listener assigned a movie from one Jared Patrick will be talked about by us. We haven't done it in a while. We're going to line up on all three films.
All three.
Three for three.
And I guess we'll be letting people down because I'm sure that our audience is going to be very disappointed to hear that Judy Blume is not going to be discussed. Or
Puss in Boots 1.
Oh, geez.
Or Puss in Boots 1.
We had a lot to talk about.
Also, I'd like to say that still... A Michael J. Fox movie has been seen by it's been seen by this fellow over there.
Yes.
I've seen it. It's available on the old Apple TV over there if you are a subscribers, guys, and you would like to see still a Michael J. Fox movie. It's good. It's very good. I will be discussing that one next week. All right?
It'll be seen by both of us next week.
And hopefully some other people can watch it as well. A lot of really creative things. Remember Room 237? Yeah, Room 237, which we both liked quite a bit with the insane
Shining
people.
Shining documentary.
Yeah, the insane people who have these various theories on The Shining. Have you seen that, Avery?
Yes, I did see Room 237.
They did something in that movie I hadn't really seen done before, where they were using clips from Kubrick films to tell the narrative, and it was amazing. And I haven't really seen it done effectively since until still. A Michael J. Fox movie.
Right.
It's very good. They're using a bunch of Michael J. Fox movies as he's describing what's going on to show what's happening.
Really?
Hundreds of hours of viewing of his movies, I would imagine, to make things line up.
So was it stuff that was kind of hiding in plain sight then?
I don't know what that means.
Did you get like a new perspective on his illness?
No. No, never. I mean, for sure.
Like, was there anything you didn't notice, let's say, from Back to the Future?
Well, it's kind of like, no. But it's like with documentaries, you can't just be a talking head documentary or else you're dead in the water, right?
Yeah.
There's very few examples, exceptions to that. I think that most people are kind of just, they've had enough of the talking head. So it's always a matter of finding like creative ways to tell the story. And what they did with this one was rather than animation, he'll be talking about, you know, I was running down the hall after I found out my diagnosis. And then they'd show like a shot from Doc Holliday.
Oh, where he's now running. I gotcha. Yeah, yeah. I gotcha. I thought you were saying they were kind of linking up his illness with how he was doing
no
in
one could
the
think
movie.
That one, no reasonable person.
Brian, I hate to do it, but I'm going to have to agree with Brian on this one. No reasonable person would have thought that.
Could have been. Could have been. Who knows?
You know what? I definitely could have.
All right. Brian, you look dark.
I feel dark.
On the video.
Okay.
All right.
He does. He is shrouded in darkness.
It doesn't look good. I'm going to be honest.
Really?
If anyone's, maybe to close that.
What? How is that going to help?
It's going to help.
It does look like Brian is lit by candlelight.
Did that help?
No, it looks
worse.
Looks more like Barry Lyndon than ever. All right. Let's get into what we do here. The program.
Explain Still to me again.
So we'll be talking about Still next week. Three movies we're going to line up on. And two of them are forever going to live in unison or going to be connected because of the... Both of the driving forces behind them are Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Not even alums, because they're still making that show.
They're the main cast.
Hey, before we get to fanfiction, I want to do an apology to the listeners.
Okay.
Also, at the same
like
time,
like for the general tone of the show,
I would like to chastise the listeners. I would like to chastise both of you. I'd like to chastise everyone except for Max MacPhail.
I have not seen Targets yet.
That's chastisable. Max MacPhail, if I'm saying your name wrong, I'm sorry, Max, but it's M C P H A I L MacPhail.
Well,
I believe.
Sounds about right. Dude.
I bet most people fail on spelling his name, and the joke's on them. But Max MacPhail emailed me, and he said, "Hey, bro. What's up?" I mean, this is his tone, right? "What's up, bro?" He's like, you forgot a movie, bro, on irresponsible gun handling
scenes. I'm sure I forgot a lot.
Yeah, we forgot quite a few, I'm sure. But the one that was in my head, and I even brought it up on the After Disaster, and all of us were trying to think of it. And I said, he's wildly brandishing his gun, and everyone ducks. Goodfellas. Spider. Tommy was Spider.
Oh, Tommy was, yeah.
What? That could have been number one.
That's right.
It should have been number one on everyone's list, and we all missed it across the board. How irresponsible can you get? He's hammered. He's playing cards. He's flailing around with a gun. He shoots Spider in the foot. Your foot looks bigger than your head.
Yeah, I forgot.
Two separate scenes.
We both forgot about that. Because the one that came to mind for Goodfellas is Karen holding the gun on...
That was passion, though. I mean, well, I wouldn't even call that irresponsible. I mean, I guess. Also, killing a sacred deer, there's a fairly... I'm not going to give anything away, but killing of a sacred deer, fairly irresponsible gun-toting blindfolded scene within that movie.
Twitter user and listener of the show, Steven Antonuccio, pointed out that we missed one in the Wild Bunch where the general's firing a 50 caliber machine gun wildly around the town. Remember, he was supposed to mount it on a...
Yes.
Yeah, he's just indiscriminately firing a fucking 50 cal.
I don't like it when we miss the obvious ones, and I'm shocked that our listenership missed it too.
I thought of that one.
I'd imagine that there's other Max MacPhails out there that thought of it, but you know, it just shows like we only hear from a very small percentage of people who listen to this program who give us their picks for the top five. So,
true.
Guys, thank you very much. I'm fucking with you to an extent, but how did we all miss that?
If you're one of the aforementioned listeners, hop on the social media and vote for our top fives.
Yeah. Speaking of listeners, Matt Rixner will have us watch A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night.
Oh,
we'll be watching that for next week's episode. I've been meaning to watch that since it came out. So I've been meaning to watch that for years. And I'm very excited to have an excuse to watch A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night. I started it one night, but I did not feel like staying up till 3 a.m. to watch it. So
okay.
I was just curious to see how the opening scene goes. And
2014's A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night?
Yeah. And then finally, you've heard me talking about a documentary that I produced that's now complete, and it's doing the festival circuit, Rand's La Lucha, and that is playing on the festival circuit. This Sunday, May 21st, in New York City, the Big Apple Film Festival. You can go to the Big Apple Film Festival for tickets. If you live in the New York area and you're an educator or you have friends or families who are educators, it's a very good movie, very informative, very well. I'm proud of that movie, being part of that movie, and you'll see a whole lot of stuff that Mike and I shot and ran, directed, and I produced, and good stuff. La Lucha at the Big Apple Film Festival. Oh, and thank you very much to everyone who is a part of Loaded for Bear. Things are going well. Things are going swimmingly.
Good.
Your guy hasn't transferred any of the money. It's still tied up in escrow.
Well, that's the
trick. I can't pay people yet.
The wrinkle.
But we're still working.
He's my guy all of a sudden when he keeps the money.
He's your guy until I get the money. Then he'll be my guy.
That's a good point.
Let's keep talking.
So yeah, loadedforbeardoc.com for that. All right, let's get to the actual program. Enough Anderson blabbing.
Fanfliction.
What have the people seen, Avery?
Compiled by the Mitch Burns. Dan Hayde on Facebook watched Still, a Michael J. Fox movie. I think I get it now. Some of the most creative storytelling I've seen in any documentary using archival footage.
Oh.
To illustrate.
Could have said that.
Dare I say animate.
Ooh.
Each step along his life and career.
That makes sense. Anderson, why couldn't you say that?
It was unlike anything I've ever seen. Except for when Anderson said, at times it was heartbreaking as someone who grew up with his movies and TV shows to see how much he has declined over the years and to see him struggle. But his optimism, sense of humor, and funny moments, especially with his family, pulls you right out of it. Definitely recommend.
Daniel Haidt, a contributor to Loaded for Bear. So sorry to lead me back to that water. But thank you, Daniel Haidt, for putting that in such eloquent words and for contributing to my documentary. However, you should see Room 237 because that will allow you to see the same techniques used.
All right.
Jason Steinhoff, Guardians of the Galaxy 3, Volume 3. Protagonist, Rocket. Antagonist, evil scientist. Plot, storm the castle. I laughed, I cried, I had a good time.
He cried.
Maybe he stubbed his toe.
Oliver Judd on Facebook via the DC Film Fest. Number one, The Pod Generation. An interesting near future sci-fi premise of being able to grow babies in external wombs. It didn't know what kind of story it wanted to tell and left me wanting so much more in a bad way. 2 stars. And secondly, The Origin of Evil, a French language dark comedy thriller reminiscent of Knives Out. Worth the watch. 3 stars.
All right.
And Aaron West on Facebook. I love that. Are you there, God? It might be because I have a 12-year-old daughter, but I really connected with this movie. A great coming-of-age tale from a female point of view.
Everyone I've heard who's seen it has said good things, for what it's worth.
Are you there, God?
It's probably a good movie.
I also got dusty at Guardians.
Did you?
I did.
Really?
And I watched another movie that made me feel like a young balding Brian.
Oh, let's hear it.
On Mother's Day, my mom sat the family down and we put on a little Amazon Prime.
Mm-hmm.
I watched Air.
Yeah.
And I saw the world through bald Brian's lens.
How'd the world look?
Simple.
Pretty smooth?
Yeah, pretty straightforward.
Goes down smooth.
Pretty straightforward.
Enjoyable.
Fun.
Yeah.
Oh, just let it wash over
me. That's right. Enjoyable.
With just a Brian smile on my face.
I wish.
And I was scared for the future of my mental
but
health.
But you never saw Air.
No. It does go down smooth. I don't think I need to, Barbara.
It's a good Thanksgiving movie.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
a good.
Save it for a family,
the holidays,
family
yeah.
viewing.
I'll save it for never. Because there's so many movies I've never
mistake.
Seen.
That's a mistake.
So many good movies that I've never seen that are way better than Air. I can guarantee you that I should be trying to catch up with.
It was probably true.
It was a good fast food.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or it surprised you.
Hey, speaking of fast food, I don't even know if this is...
It's like a fat burger or Chipotle. It's like, hey, yeah, that's fast food, but I feel good about what I've done.
It's okay. Not a burrito, but it is Chipotle. Yeah.
It's not all empty calories is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. Real quick. Are you excited about the live watch along this month?
Ostensibly, yes. I'd like to hear what we're watching, but I like the idea of it.
It was Brian's pick. Brian gets to choose because he won gambling last month, and that's how it works. So for the live watch along, for those of you who are part of that tier, we watch a movie, Brian and I, hand in hand, side by side, on my couch usually, unless we're doing it at the Chateau Marmont when Florence invites us. But that's why we did it last month, I guess.
That's
right. Now we're back to my place where we're watching it, and then I have a little bell, and I ring the bell, and Atticus brings us drinks if I so request.
This actually does happen.
That's pretty good.
Brian won last month, so it's his pick. I asked him at least 2 or 3 times.
Brian dropped the ball.
Brian gave me nothing. So I'm like, fuck it. I'm going to pick. And we're going to be watching Rip Torn chuck a child, a baby, if you will, into a fire.
That's what I would have chosen.
We're watching Beastmaster, baby.
I've never seen
it. Have you never seen?
No.
Oh, the Beastmaster will be seen by us at least. So look for that. That's May 24th, Wednesday, 6:30 p.m. Pacific Standard Time is when we begin that. So excited for that. Okay.
The Beastmaster, according to...
The Beastmaster, yes.
According to the poster. And yes, it is streaming on Prime Video. Lucky you.
Just
you
like Air.
That's right. Tanya, double feature.
Tanya Roberts. Very young Anderson watched this way too many times and probably should not have seen it at all, ever.
It's really. Only rated PG.
Wait till you see. Wait till you see. I mean, Rip Torn hurls a baby into the fire, Brian.
Into flames. You blew Gil's mind when you said that.
I did. All right, let's talk about some movies. We got some fun stuff to talk about. Avery, and you need to have a camera for God's sake.
Oh, and I also saw Nausicaa. Fucking rad.
Oh, Nausicaa.
Very good.
Nausicaa.
Of the Valley of the
Apparently,
Wind.
There's...
In the Valley of the Wind.
I don't know if we had talked about this. In honor of Ponyo coming back out, for the 15th year anniversary, they're showing them all the Studio Ghibli in theaters.
Yeah, yeah.
And I could have seen fucking Nausicaa, but I missed it.
I believe it's Ghibli. Got some good
Ghibli,
news for
is
you.
Is it Ghibli?
I believe it's Ghib.
Ghibli.
I've already secured my ticket for me and the boy.
Oh.
We're going to see Nausicaa in the theater.
So I haven't missed it.
You haven't missed it unless they sold out. The theater that I'm going to is a small theater. I'll send you the link. A listener sent me the link.
Because they're showing most of them.
Oh,
I don't think it was all of them.
A lot of them, yeah.
But most of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Including Mononoke, Spirited Away, Ponyo, Nausicaa, and a couple of the other big ones.
Yeah. Where's the July 9th? It's going to be playing in Los Angeles in three separate theaters.
All right. July 9th.
July 9th. Yes. So Atticus and I are going to be seeing this. I hope that I'm not making a mistake by bringing him to something. Maybe I just say, no, I'm going to take Avery instead. But we'll talk.
My other
Maybe you can come to the same theater. We can all like,
Avery and Addy.
I keep thinking about all week. Avery said something real
offensive,
insightful. I think last week where he's talking about people that get offended and people that get really upset, especially with like dark comedy and dark humor and making like fun of like really dark stuff, especially if it concerns yourself, or people that had no trauma growing up. And I think you're really onto something with that.
Yeah,
is that something you picked up on in the comedy world?
I think. Well, I think I've never heard anybody who actually has that kind of background take issue with that sort of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It seems like most people who've walked the walk can talk the talk or can relate to it.
It's interesting.
I've never really made that connection, but I think you're absolutely right. And a lot of the time, the people that are screaming the most and most offended are people that didn't really have a whole lot. I could be wrong, and I'm sure, you know, there's cases out there where people were, you know, horribly, tragically abused and whatnot, and they still have a very thin skin or get very easily offended. Wow. But what's that?
Thin skin.
Oh, is that
they just toughen up and take it?
Thin skin. Well, I have a thin skin. So.
That's true. Okay. Well, you made your point.
But also, I like to make fun of really like horrible things that happened to me or Gio.
Any more traumatic emails from Gio?
I have not. Gio's just, apparently it helped me laughing at his childhood tragedy and I guess being evicted from their apartment for dancing on his 10th birthday for less than 10 minutes. He enjoyed me laughing at it so much. It was cathartic for him. And he thinks that I should, I do that for listeners. And I said, no, Gio, I'm not going to ask people to pour their heart out so I can laugh at them. That just doesn't feel right. But it worked for Gio. So yeah, Gio, keep him coming to Brian.
It was Gio's version of Fight Club where he's crying at the men's meetings.
That's right.
But he doesn't have the brain tumor meetings where he just gets to let it all out.
I was just thinking about that for the show. How fucking funny is that? My ex-wife met a guy and they're having a kid. Good for them.
All right. Are you ready?
Where do you want to start? This is an interesting episode. We got a wide range.
I think we start with the juicy.
What's juicy?
I don't know. I think we start with I always think like, okay, what if people only have so much time to listen to this thing, right? And I don't want them to miss the best movie of the week. So why don't we go best to first, to best to worst? Nah, it's not fair.
We're talking Air?
We're not talking Air because...
I already flicked across that.
As far as what's in the theater, what's new, not Jared Patrick's choice, which is a 1947 noir film, which we'll do after we talk about the two new movies that are in theaters right now. All right, so let's just start off with the best of the two, the two It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia movies.
Fool's Paradise is in theaters now. Yes, Fool's Paradise,
directed by Charles... No.
Written it?
Come on.
We'll save that.
Blackberry.
Blackberry is a 2023 film directed by Matt Johnson. He, director of The Dirties, as Anderson has made sure to mention here before, starring Jay Baruchel, Glenn Howerton, Matt Johnson himself is in this film, Saul Rubinek, Michael Ironside, Cary Elwes makes an appearance. 97% in Rotten Tomatoes. I was shocked.
Low.
I
think shocked.
I was shocked. Going into this, like, how is this fucking movie 97%?
Well, Matt Johnson.
I think when we gambled on this, I think I guessed like 70 or 71, if I remember correctly. So I was not prepared for this to be a excellent movie, which it is.
Yeah.
In theaters now. it's funny that it's right on the heels of a movie like Air, which is good, and Tetris, which is also good, sort of examining these. Anderson, we're the one who said, oh, we're going to start having these movies, biopics about companies or
biopics
products.
Biopics about products, yeah.
That's brand essentially movies. What this is.
Brand movies, yeah. Because brands have become such a huge Gucci. Another one.
They're doing one about the creator of Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
I heard. Trailer for that. But I think that's like fiction.
Who knows?
No, I think
that they're like they made up a bunch of bullshit about it.
Oh, like a Weird Al kind of thing?
I could be wrong, but that's what I heard.
I don't know. We're talking about Blackberry, though.
Yeah, Blackberry. So yeah, Matt Johnson blew our minds, right, when we saw The Dirties back in the day. We got to be careful to talk too much about The Dirties because it's really easy to reveal what the movie really is about, which you don't find out until the very end, which is ultimately shocking. It really is shocking and ballsy to sit down and write a movie like The Dirties. But we both highly recommend The Dirties. Matt Johnson kind of came out of left field. He's a Canadian kid, really, really talented filmmaker, which comes through in The Dirties. And he also stars in it. He starred in it with Owen, his lifelong friend. And Owen is a teacher. He's a professor. I wonder if Owen's in this one. I should have looked, but the two of them made movies together. And then Matt Johnson, his next project was Project Avalanche, Operation Avalanche, I should say, which is about, once again, Matt Johnson and Owen. They star in this one as well. Operation Avalanche, which is about how they stumble across the faking of the moon landing. And, you know, Kubrick is somewhat involved as an idea. And right. they faked the moon landing. There was some really good stuff in there, but ultimately it just seemed a little bit too big, I guess, maybe. Mm. Too big of an idea for him. I don't know. I was let down. There was a great car chase scene in the middle of Operation Avalanche, which is almost worth the price of admission. But I was excited to see that he was back on the horse and making this one. Matt Johnson, I will always be an admirer and will always see whatever he makes.
Was there any concern on your part where there was on mine where you're like, why is this guy making effectively what I incorrectly assumed would be a made-for-TV movie?
Yeah.
You know, like just the fact that it's what it is, you know, about the fucking phone.
He's got that Canadian, he's got the Canadian connection. He's very, very Canadian.
This movie is very Canadian.
As is Jay Baruchel. Yeah. And this is a Canadian story, ultimately, with the players involved. So why don't you set up what this premise is, and we'll go from there.
Feels silly almost, but I'll tell you what this is about. It's right there in the title, of course. But Matt Johnson and Jay Baruchel play the leads of Research in Motion, a Canadian tech company, and they go to pitch their new phone. So this is like 1996, right? This is the dawn of cell phones, yeah. Cellular technology.
Carriers actually becoming available for like the everyman.
Yeah, because like everyone's got pagers at this point, but they're looking into making cell phones that work in various different ways. Jay Baruchel and Matt Johnson themselves play the heads of Research in Motion, and they go to pitch their product to Glenn Howerton, who could not be balder or more aloof and uninterested in their product.
His mind is elsewhere. He's got a big meeting coming up, and
he goes cowboy and he dismisses them almost entirely, leaves them sitting in his office. He goes into his meeting and goes cowboy, takes responsibility for a certain report that was done.
Yeah,
by
he shows
else.
His character that he's cutthroat and a climber and do anything.
And just couldn't help himself just immediately.
Yeah.
I love that. Just immediately.
Which dives in.
It's genius because we can see his character, we can see his flaws, we can see just how aggressive he is right off the bat. We see it by his actions instead of. And so. Then now he's
so yeah. They fire him because of the deal doesn't go through. He acted like an asshole, and his company fires him. He out of the blue calls on Jay Baruchel and Matt Johnson.
No, because they leave their materials in his office.
Oh, yeah, that's right. About.
By chance, they left the easel.
That's
there.
Right. That's right. The easel's still there with the pitch. With
so
the
he
pitch
gives
deck.
It his attention for the first time ever, probably. And he's like, maybe they're onto something. And he's desperate. So it goes from there.
He's looking for something. And he calls him up. He says, I will be the CEO of your company for 50% of your company and so much money.
It's Shark Tank moment. Yeah.
And then they negotiate. And,
okay. Well, you're telling the whole story. I mean,
I'm telling the first 15 minutes of the movie.
Feels like you're telling a lot.
Anyway, the meat of the conflict comes when Glenn Howerton's very abrasive, ball silly. But very abrasive.
His name is Ball Silly, yes.
Yes, Mr.
Get off the fucking internet!
When he arrives at Research in Motion, the movie kicks up a notch or two because Research in Motion, if you remember, Anderson reminded me of was, remember the Tower Records documentary? How like everyone at Tower Records at a certain point was just like, they were like the stock boy from like 20 years ago, and now they're like CEO or like COO or whatever. It's a clubhouse and aren't running a real business. They're talking about Star Wars and having movie nights and fucking around the internet. Well, because they're a bunch of
nerdy friends that all got together.
And Glenn Howerton is this like he can give a shit about
Glenn
the technology.
Howerton's a businessman. He's a salesman.
Yeah, so he comes in and there's an immediate clash, and it's quite enjoyable.
It's a culture clash for sure.
Yeah, but it's enjoyable. The movie sings.
It's
yes.
It sings is like, yeah, putting it lightly. It's there's very little fat on this, on this bone, in this meat. It's very lean. And like it's every scene from the beginning is a banger, and then the next scene's even better than that, and then the next scene's even better than that. Somehow each scene outdoes the scene from before, and Howerton definitely steals every scene he's in, but he's surrounded by really, like, Matt Johnson's character is
I was
amazing.
Blown away by how good he was.
Matt
Johnson was so funny.
You gotta see The Dirties. You gotta go back and watch
He was excellent.
He's fantastic.
But it's Howerton who plays a very sassy man. Wouldn't you say? Would you not say? Very sassy man. Dude, I laughed.
You sassed him.
You sassed him. Oh, for sure I did. Oh, I sassed him. Oh, it's just the tone of it. It's got a little succession to it, for sure. Yeah, right?
I thought it was kind of like a Wolf of Wall Street meets Silicon Valley. In terms of some of the vibe.
And some of another movie. This inspired this week's list, which is top five tech movies, because this is top 10 tech movies I've ever seen. Wow. This is a movie that won't get knocked off. I can't imagine it not being in my top 10 at the end of the year. I absolutely love this movie.
If it's not, it's a great year for movies.
Yeah, if this does get bumped, I'd have to agree. Only a couple complaints, and I'm surprised you're not complaining, but I thought some of the wig work was a little bit...
Yeah, I mean...
I kept hearing you bitch about Baruchel's wig.
You know what? I did a lot of looking at the real people, because some of the wig work was... did call attention to itself, but these guys have very specific looks. You know what I mean? Whatever the dude's name was, Baruchel's character, that's kind of how he looked. He actually is kind of a bigger guy. And then, Howerton, the ball silly, you know, look, the bald spot was not, elegantly
cul-de-sac.
Done.
It's a cul-de-sac.
Cul-de-sac, right? That's right.
Another mistake, another fault is that they didn't show the actual characters at the end of the movie, which
would have liked that.
Would have loved that. I love it when they do that. And then finally, this one's going to stick with me. And when I get a chance to talk to Matt Johnson, which I will one day talk to that guy and be like, dude, how'd you let this happen? Where he, like, they have movie nights where the nerdy friends and the guys that run the company have movie night. What? And he announces to everyone, to their delight, movie night tonight, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Letterbox. And then they show them watching the 4x3.
Oh, that's interesting.
Why not show a Letterbox version? What was that? Or cut the Letterbox scene.
Because they even mentioned it by like the Letterbox version.
Distracting.
Because it was 1997.
That would have been a big deal to get the Letterbox version to project. And then it wasn't Letterbox. And I'm like, it's like when there's a movie made about a movie and they make mistakes. It's like, hey, guys, this is the one.
Hollywood's the one thing you should
famous for making mistakes about other people's.
Sports.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, law.
But when it's about movies, like, get it right, guys. You know what I mean? So that was distracting. But other than that, this movie's damn near perfect for what it is.
It's really good, and it's really well acted. I mean, top to bottom, like, Jake Baruchel, like, acts his balls off.
He was very good.
Glenn had some of the most satisfying freakouts I've seen. I just loved watching him lose his shit.
Now, you watch It's Always Sunny, yeah?
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's playing Dennis, but, like, if Dennis came from a more, like, Ivy... like a more cultured background.
Yes. I'd actually disagree. I'm just going to say that Dennis is really very overly cocksure of himself. He's smug, and it's not a bad thing, but he really believes in himself, and he almost, to an absurd degree. This guy is more like the shark that smells blood in the water.
Because he's not charming at all.
He doesn't try to be.
And there's nothing like
him. Doesn't give a shit if people like him or dislike him. And you're right, Dennis.
I was shocked when he said please once, when he asked him to turn it. Could you please turn off the projector? I was surprised he even said please.
Great character. Yeah. But you're seeing a lot of Dennis in the performance.
Of course, you can't help
it. Yeah, oh yeah.
I mean, it's not like he disappeared and now... I wonder how people would take this if they're going to be completely blown away for those who have never seen It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
I think they will. I talked to a friend of mine earlier today who doesn't watch. He thinks this might hurt our friendship, actually, now that I think about it. I'm just reflecting on our conversation earlier today, but he said he doesn't watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia because he doesn't think it's funny.
Oh, no.
Who I don't is know this if I can more, be friends with this imbecile? Guy anymore.
That is not a valid reason.
It's not a valid reason, yeah.
There's many reasons one could not watch it. That's not one of them.
I have to question that relationship. Okay. But yeah, I wonder if this guy's going to be like, Glenn Howerton is going to come out of left field and be like, who is this guy?
He's fantastic.
Now that we've oversold it.
I know.
Which we may have. Guys, this is such a fun ride. It's fun. It's informative, energetic.
And it goes quick.
It does.
It's a little under 2 hours and it feels like it's moving the whole time.
I didn't want it to end. I really didn't.
What jurisdiction does the SEC have in Canada? I understand that they... govern stuff that happens in the U.S., i.e. trades or whatever, payments. But, like, what could they have really done?
You're asking, first of all, I'm offended that you're not looking at me, right? You're asking Avery. Why would Avery know?
What does it stand for?
It stands for Securities and Exchange Commission.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
I would have lost that bet.
I'm pretty offended, but why you think anyone at this table would know, especially Canadian law, is beyond me.
I have a degree in SEC.
Canadian law. All right, no one knows.
All right, I didn't mean to slip my coffee right into the microphone. I apologize. All right, let's talk about a sad movie.
Oh, it was fun. I gotta rewatch because there's a lot of quotes in there. It was so quick that it was hard to pick them all up.
Sassy was great. Yeah,
luckily, Sassy was very funny.
I got to watch this at home. We got screeners for it. Thank you very much.
Screeners. So you could go back.
I got to rewatch a few
you
scenes.
Son of a bitch!
I even pulled the computer in to show my wife one of the scenes, and she said that she didn't want to see it. She's like, I won't think it's funny, Anderson. Please, and I'm like, honey, you gotta watch this. And she snickered. I got her.
That's
good.
Laugh a little.
Yeah.
That is a high watermark.
I meant to ask you, were you familiar with the name Balzilli being a Penguins fan?
No, I don't remember any of that happening. But yes, there is hockey background,
hockey
and there's hockey throughout because Balzilli likes his hockey and he's listening to whatever. You know, they make it a point. I thought that was just a Canadian thing, whatever. Hockey takes more of a center stage in the third act. I was already texting friends of mine halfway through this movie saying, this movie is fucking amazing. You got to watch this movie. It's so much fun. I love this movie. Telling my wife, like halfway through the movie, I was letting people know. So it has nothing to do with the fact that Gary Bettman's actually portrayed in this movie.
Well, I didn't mean that. I just meant I didn't know if you had heard it. Making the news, making the rounds. And
I might have back in the day. Everyone wanted to to relocate that team at one point.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
They were very... They're a damaged franchise.
You know what I liked about this too? The storytelling was they skipped over all the stuff where like the product gets big. Like they smash cut right from
to Oprah. Oprah was the first person.
Right to like, oh, it's a huge success.
Yeah.
Or they're not going to bother with all that shit.
But they kind of made it seem like that wasn't even the biggest success I could get. And I had to do the math. I'm like, oh, I guess Oprah wasn't that big at that time.
Oh, no,
because they
was.
Started with Oprah. I think she's gotten bigger. No.
In the late 90s?
Because then later in the movie, they're getting even more excited for something that seemed like it wasn't as big as Oprah.
Oh.
I need to see this movie again. I almost went and saw it in the theater like afterwards.
It was great in theaters.
I would love to go see this in theaters, yeah. Maybe I'll still do that. Solid it's not going to be in theaters long.
And I was the thing I was disappointed by was I wish there were more people in my theater because the couple of people who were there were really laughing. Really enjoyed it. But this would have been great in a full theater.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You just don't get that anymore.
Because it's laugh out loud. It is
laugh out loud.
Very funny.
I wonder if this gets a cult following. Like, you know, the type of movie you show it like 10 years later, like on the 10-year anniversary.
Why isn't this big? This seems like this would be a no-brainer.
There's just so much noise out there, and they don't have any giant stars in it, right?
Does this sneak into the Oscars?
I don't think so.
Even for
the fucking Oscars or the Oscars?
I like the soundtrack.
Maybe like a writing.
Fun.
Yeah, I could see.
Soundtrack was great. Oh,
they incorporated some phone sounds in there too, and the ringing. And
this has a lot of the same vibe as the Beta Test, as far as office culture and the kind of things that I respond to, because it's such a different world. And
the Beta Test was a lot more, while great, the humor was much more subtle. You know what I mean?
More
it's
of
almost
an overt
like dry laughs, whereas this is, they swing for the fences.
There's some over-the-top laughter and comedy in the Beta Test, right?
Not as much.
I mean, he performs. I'm talking about Jim Cummings. All right.
There he is.
There she is. His own wife. Talking about the Beta Test now. God damn, I love that movie.
Very sassy.
Very sassy man. Would you not say? Oh, I sassed it.
Sure, always.
I love Matt Johnson.
He honestly might have been my favorite part of the movie.
I think he
blew me away.
I love Howerton in this, but I think that Matt Johnson was like every time he's on screen, I'm just like
he was great. He had a very Judah Friedlander vibe.
And I love the postscript too. The epilogue about that character.
Yes, so I was satisfying. So happy,
so satisfying,
because he finally does what I would think I would want to do in that position. No one ever does it.
Yeah. All right, let's keep
it's great,
guys. See this movie. See it in theaters. Support movies like this. We need more movies like this, which not necessarily like product placement movies or movies about devices and technology, but just executed on this level is just so well done.
How was it on the fun scale, Brian?
Very fun.
Yeah. Very fun. Yeah.
It was a fun movie.
Let's talk about a movie that was supposed to be fun and talk about like no big names in this one. So it's not probably going to get the love or the push.
No big names?
No. In Blackberry.
Oh, okay.
However, there's another movie that came out and will always be in my mind, Tethered, to BlackBerry and vice versa. Fool's Paradise, which is Charlie Day's directorial debut. He also stars in it. That also came out the exact same day.
Stands in stark contrast in certain ways.
Go ahead.
Fool's Paradise is a 2023 film written and directed by Charlie Day, also of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, starring Charlie Day, Ken Jeong, Kate Beckinsale, Adrian Brody, Edie Falco, Ray Liotta, Jason Sudeikis, Common, Jillian Bell, and John Malkovich.
Jason Bateman's in there, too. You say that?
Was I not mentioning that? I'm sorry. I missed
you may have.
He has a very small role.
Small role, yeah.
14% of Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, it's 14 now.
14.
Jesus.
Honestly, feels about right.
Does it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This movie felt much longer than BlackBerry.
Yeah,
it is significantly shorter.
It's unfortunate, because I could totally see what the vibe was supposed to be and where it was going, and it came from a real place of love. I can't quite put my finger on where it went wrong, other than it just wasn't snappy enough, and it wasn't funny enough, and it wasn't...
That's funny. The one thing I would say is it's snappy, because the pace is almost breakneck.
But it doesn't match the actual comedy.
No, it doesn't at all.
It seems like 20 years too late or something.
I wanted so much to like this movie. I think you mentioned this is kind of a sad movie.
It's not sad
in content. It's sad in
context that it's just could have been really fun. And I can almost see what was going on in Charlie Day's head when he set out to make this. It just didn't get executed the way that they intended.
It's hard to imagine a more disappointing movie.
I think you're right. I think you could be right. There's so many things here.
And I wanted so much to like this, so I feel bad. This is a passion project. The guy wrote, directed, and starred in it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's very bad.
So the story is this. It's a satire of Hollywood, essentially, which, I don't know, okay. So it's about this guy who's in a mental institution. That's where we first see him. And he's a dead ringer for this big-time method actor played by somebody who looks just like Charlie Day, who is Charlie Day. And
I wanted a movie about that guy.
Yeah, that could have been more interesting.
So the
big star is a method actor. He's playing Billy the Kid, and he's being very, very difficult with the director and everyone involved and producers. And they need to work with somebody who they happen to fall upon this guy who's in a mental institution, Charlie Day, who looks just like him because they're the same. So they say, great, well, let's have him play some of the parts because our lead actor is not leaving his trailer. He's being method. He's being very, very difficult. So they bring on this guy who's a mute to do like a stand-in.
As they point out, he's not technically mute, but he doesn't speak.
He doesn't speak, right? And they're not sure why. They said something traumatic from his past, perhaps. It was something that was brought on psychologically.
Were you hoping that would be revealed?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, of course. That was me too. And I was like, all right, well, I guess we're not getting that.
There's a chance for this movie to become like, you know, kind of real and
memorable,
heartfelt and have, I mean, I'm such a sucker for things like that. There is a moment at the end of the movie where I got a little choked up, which is stupid.
That's very dumb.
I'm mad at myself for doing so, but it did. It got me. What ends up happening is this movie turns into a love story between the mute Charlie Day, who is a nobody mental patient, and a nobody publicist in Ken Jeong.
It's very much more Ken Jeong's story.
Yes, because he has lines and whatnot.
And it's also about his arc, you know, Charlie Day's character is exact same at the beginning of the movie as he is at the end, for the most part. Whereas Ken Jeong goes through some personal growth. And I will say that I enjoyed Ken Jeong's performance. I enjoyed what I think it was supposed to be. Like, he was doing work in this movie. You know what I mean? He was laying it all out there. I don't know that it added up to much, but he was A for effort.
The two leads felt like subplots. Like, they could have worked as a subplot.
Yeah, and totally.
Instead, they were the leads, and there was all these more interesting characters, perhaps, like Sudeikis' character. I could have seen more of that character.
Adrian Brody's character.
Brody's character, which it's just they were all kind of written too cutesy.
It was a little. It was Wes Anderson.
It was
jammed
Wes Anderson.
into 90 minutes,
without all of the mise en scene. You know, right? That we didn't see the two dimensional stuff.
Sure. So, yeah.
But as far as the core
characters,
and it was Charlie Day also. You know, a love letter to the silent era to an extent with Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton and the silent stars of their time, but there wasn't. very much slapstick involved, was there?
No.
It was a lot of facial stuff from Charlie, who I love. I love Charlie Day. I do, and yeah, I wanted to see this movie do well, and it makes me sad too.
I think it's one of our finest comedic actors.
So how is it today? So bad?
It's. I don't even know if bad is the right word. It's just not good.
It feels poorly conceived.
It's just not good, and it seems like everyone is in a different movie. No one has any idea what the tone is, really, what movie they're supposed to be in. Like, some of them are playing it way over the top. Ken Jeong is playing it completely over the top all the way through, and then others are a little more subtle. And it's not goofy enough or lampoony enough for it to get away with some of the performances. It's just
the common character was out of place. A lot of characters are out of place.
I'm trying to remember common.
He was the homeless guy.
Oh yeah, that's where it really went south for me. Like, I'm like, oh, I'm maybe like, it's gonna turn. That was the point where it really needed to turn a corner in a good way, and it kind of went down a really like weird.
It turned the wrong corner.
Yeah, it turned deeper into itself in a bad way.
Common does that.
It was all Common's fault. So what we're saying is Charlie Day tried to make a good movie and Common fucking ruined it.
He ruins most things. That's like Common.
That's right.
I'm not a Common fan.
The Malkovich scene.
We could see that telegraph from a mile away because you knew he's in the movie because you see his name in the beginning, right? And it's like, all right, here comes Malkovich. Was it trying to see something bigger too?
I think it really was.
But we just missed it with the guy on oxygen who couldn't talk. And then that big soliloquy from Malkovich at the end did nothing for him.
Added up to nothing.
Yeah, I feel like we're being mean, but
I don't like talking shit about movies, especially ones, you know, that this is not a big studio movie. This is not a big, you know, summer blockbuster.
Why has this got so few? The review count was shocking to me. I think it only has something like 25 reviews.
I wouldn't be surprised.
With all these stars.
I wouldn't be surprised if they weren't holding screenings.
Oh, really? They knew what they got?
Yeah.
Thunforge. Unfortunate.
It's unfortunate it is. I wanted this to be really good.
I wonder if he's got another movie in him or if he's just done now.
That's my fear, is that now he doesn't get another bite at the apple, you know, doing his own thing.
This is the type of movie I'd be furious. I'd be furious if critics were like signing off on this and giving it. And I could see, I've seen things like that happen where it's like, they like this? You know, this is the kind of movie where I get really, really pissed. That's not happening. Now it's the other way around. I wish it was like, 50
somewhere,
or
somewhere
something.
In the middle. It actually is kind of surprising, right, to see critics uniformly trashing this movie because it has a lot going for it critic-wise. Like, you know, it's quirky, it's weird,
it's offbeat,
it's about Hollywood. It's Charlie Day. Imagine he's, you know, well-received in those circles.
And it's lampooning Hollywood, which I'm sure critics enjoy, like, you know, lap up with a spoon when it's done right, but... Yeah, it's just the jokes. Even Adrian Brody, like, it was a fun character, but like a lot of the lines were just... I was talking about how some of the lines, especially that first half of Guardians last week, wasn't great for me. But I mean, this made Guardians seem like Coen Brothers.
What was your favorite? What was your favorite part of this? If one comes to mind,
to Sudeikis, that whole Sudeikis scene where he's showing his house, and
that was okay. I'm really digging deep here, but I would say the chair sequence. Can I get you a chair?
You like that?
No, but it's also my favorite thing. I'm really scraping the barrel here.
And like, it's one of those movies where
can I get you a chair? We're standing.
That was pretty, pretty good.
I'm trying harder.
By Crafty. It's one of those movies where like at one point he's Charlie Day's character who continues to fail upward. And he's just confused and he's just going through the, like, he's not even, like Brian said, his arc doesn't do anything. He's just kind of going through the story being, he's swept up in a wave that he can't get in or out.
He's part of the machine.
Getting married and divorced. And he has no say in anything that's happening to him. And he plays a mosquito, something called a mosquito, right?
Mosquito Boy.
It's Mosquito Boy, which is a superhero, which is, you know, satire of where we are with movies today. And it's CGI, and he's supposed to be reacting to these tennis balls that Jason Bateman's shooting at him. And you could tell that it was supposed to be hilarious, but it's just, there was really nothing funny about that scene.
Cause it just was what it was.
Like, and I don't know if the page just said, okay, then Mosquito Boy gets shot with tennis balls, doesn't know how to react. So the balls hit him. He doesn't understand to duck. And this happens for 30 seconds. And then they do that.
There's no joke there. There's no tagline,
no punchline.
Yeah, like if he was allergic to tennis balls, maybe we have, you know what I mean? There's some twist where
or
it's
if like he had some kind of acrobatic skills that no one saw before and he's like starts dodging them very. Yeah. It's anything, right? There was just other than what was on the page. It was just, okay.
It's off.
Watch it on a plane, though. It's the type of movie you probably enjoy on a plane.
That's what Air is for.
That's what Air is for.
Air is a good plane. Yeah. Plus, it's called Air.
All right, let's take a break. Light is Air. Is that
what we're taking a break?
Brian, why are you so confused?
Here's the original BlackBerry.
Well done. All right, after this, we'll finish up with the listener assigned film next.
Priceline presents Go to Your Happy Price. What's up? It's Kaylee Cuoco. When it comes to travel, we all have a happy place. You can see yourself already there. It's beautiful. It might be sunny and sandy for some, neon and urban for others, deserts or rainforests or hiking trails. With Priceline, you can get to your happy place for a happy price with deals you really can't find anywhere else, like up to 60% off select hotels to Costa Rica or five-star hotels for two-star prices in Cabo. Go to Priceline.com and travel to your happy place for a happy price. All right, see ya. I'm off to Miami. No, actually, wow, look at that. No, I'm going to Hawaii now. Ooh, Cancun looks nice. You know what? Belize looks pretty nice this time of year. Or, Palm Springs.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
For the fourth year in a row, Dawn is partnering with iHeartRadio for Can't Cancel Pride, a campaign that has raised over $11 million for the LGBTQ+ community. Dawn continuously strives to celebrate visibility and inclusivity for all, and that means supporting amazing organizations like Centerlink, providing safe spaces where over 52,000 community members go each week to receive critical and life-saving services. Dawn is there for your home or your home away from home. So visit can'tcancelpride.com to learn more.
Welcome back. Thanks to Jared Patrick. He's our assigner this week, and he assigned us a movie called Out of the Past. Bad title. We'll talk about the movie and whether it's good or bad. Anderson, you talked to Jared?
I did. Jared is...
What the hell is he thinking?
Very fun guy to talk to.
All right.
I enjoyed talking to Jared. He's a cop.
Ooh.
We talked some stories, and I ended up talking to him probably for far too long. Considering the kind of day that I had and the amount of stuff that I had to do, but I just continued to ask Jared more questions, and I really enjoyed talking to Jared. So I'd never talked to him before. He's been listening for years, and he thought, you know what, I really like this show. I want to help contribute to the program. So he did so, and he got an annual at the assigner level, and he's assigned us this one. He'll be assigning us another one soon.
All right.
So out of the past, he knows that film noir is a dark spot for the two of us. We've got a blind spot. That is... film noir. And that said, this movie comes in at 8.0 on IMDb, which is towards the top.
Indeed.
Upper echelon of rated films. And I liked it. As much as I could like a film noir, I just don't get the film noir.
Let me set the table on Jared's pick. Out of the Past is a 1947 film directed by Jacques Tourneur. I think it's French for Turner. Tourneur.
Director of The Cat People.
Starring Robert Mitchum, Jane Greer, and Kirk Douglas, 93% of Rotten Tomatoes. You can rent this. This was in 1991. The National Film Preservation Board of the Library of Congress added this movie to the U.S. National Film Registry of, quote, culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant films, unquote. Bad title. Stupid title, unmemorable title. If you ask me about this in a year, I'll be like, "What? I don't know the fuck out of the
exactly."
Past is.
Maybe back in the 1947, though, it was a fine title.
Well, it's based on a book called "Builds My Gallows High," which actually is uttered in the movie. That's a good title. This is memorable.
Very good title.
It's kind of evocative. It's like, oh, we got a lot of Emmys.
The one we were just talking, To Catch a Killer. I really like that movie. It's also getting hammered by the critics. Came out earlier this year. I really, really like that movie. The original title was. Oh, Jesus. I'm forgetting
that. That's a tough title.
It is a tough title. Continues, too. This is still part of the title. No, what's it?
Murder in Plain Sight.
No, Miscreant or something like what's another word for miscreant?
Misanthrope.
Misanthrope. That was the original title.
That's memorable.
It's memorable. I know. All right. And it worked like on three levels for that movie, To Catch a Killer. Anyways,
Like Anderson mentioned, this is a film noir. It's a classic film noir. There's a femme fatale. It's about a private detective, Private Eye, who's looking into, I guess, a disappearance, and takes him all the way down to Mexico. Mexico sure has changed since 1947.
Everything has changed. That's one of the most fun things about this movie, is seeing how everything's changed, because they're all over the place. They're in San Francisco. They're in Los Angeles. They're in Mexico. Tahoe. They're in Tahoe.
Yeah. LA's a shithole, isn't it? All the noirs I've read, it's a very crime-ridden kind of shithole.
They don't really get deep in it. We see like City Hall at one point.
Yeah,
the
movie takes much more place in San Francisco and Tahoe.
Yeah, all the other places. But a quaint little town too, I think, in Tahoe, where it's like that strip where it's just where, because it's one. It opens up. It's bookended. It opens up where he's running the gas station. He owns a gas station, and there's a deaf mute. They call him deaf and dumb back then. Kid who runs the gas station, and that's
one of the characters. Like, huh? Deaf and dumb.
Yeah, it was right
off the kind.
Not kind. Deaf and dumb.
He's like, hey, boy. And then he doesn't look, and he's like, throws something at him, and like, turns around. And he's like, you know where Jimmy is? And the kid just looks. He's like, deaf and dumb, huh?
And I wrote,
a simpler time.
At that time, right as that's happening, I'm writing to my phone, deaf and dumb. Jesus. There's a really good fist fight in this movie later on, a very good fist fight. And it's all about a frame up, which you kind of expect, and pretty good miniature car wreck at one point, which I enjoyed. There's a spoiler that I think people who like noirs, this one ticks all the boxes.
Yeah,
that's one of the problems that I have with noirs.
I mean this in the best way, a tropey noir. If you're looking for a noir film to dig into, you can't do much better.
My favorite part was seeing Mitchum be so Mitchum. I'm not really familiar with Mitchum. I've not seen a ton of his work. I've seen him as an older actor for sure, but seeing him play this cool, I like him more than Bogart, which I know is probably blasphemous to a lot of people, but Bogart wanted this role and they're like,
oh really?
Yeah. He read for it and he's like, oh, this is, but I think they thought it was too similar to Maltese Falcon. But that's another thing that's interesting about this movie is Kirk Douglas and Robert Mitchum. They couldn't have more different styles of acting. And apparently they are a real pricks to each other on set. Really? And within scenes, they were doing things to sabotage one another.
Oh, funny.
Until the director finally stepped in and said, guys, you're costing me and the studio, everyone, you got to stop.
Lots of time.
They ended up becoming, friends and working in harmony. But at first they were real, their egos got in the way.
It is back when Tahoe was much smaller. It's not that it's a big city now, but at one point, they think he gives them directions. They're in somewhere else. They're in San Francisco, and the guy's like, come to see me in Tahoe. Just drive up to Emerald Bay and take a right. Yeah. It's the big house. It's like, oh, okay. That'll be the only one around.
I did a lot of that thinking while I was watching this movie. And I watch movies from the 40s, 50s for cinematics. I watch them from all different times all the time. But with this one, it really felt like a small world. Like everywhere they went, like there was like four or five characters that were awake at that time.
Yep. And they all knew each other.
And like, it was just a completely different universe than what we're used to today.
He has a very understanding girlfriend, because at one point she's like, if you still love her, go back to her and then come back to me if you're not in love.
She's a great person.
Yeah,
if you love something, set it free.
That's right.
Yeah.
Send it back to his ex.
I think my favorite part of the movie was the end, which in talking to Jared, he called it an ambiguous ending. I don't know if it was, but I'll frame it this way. Was the last piece of information that was, and I'm not giving anything away, if anyone's planning on watching this movie, and you can watch it for free if you go on Prime and then, get like a 1 week long, they offer you get a week long subscription.
Oh, sure,
for free, 7 days and something. And it is a good movie, especially if you like film noir. Like this was a very good film noir movie.
Like you said, ticks the boxes.
Ticks all the boxes. But the last piece of information that is conveyed to from one character to another is false, and we as an audience know that it's false. Mm-hmm. Do you think the reason it was false was because that character believes it, or because that character is being altruistic? Does that make sense? Are you?
I'm thinking. Tracking? Are you talking about the fishing?
Oh, that's a fun scene. All right, in talking to Jared, who assigned us this, you're wrong.
Oh,
and, well, I'll talk to you about it off air. It's not that important, but there is a scene that involves a man with a gun and a person fishing, and very casually, the person fishing, who you'd have to imagine has never killed a person in their entire life, nor even thought about killing a human being, casually casts the rod with the hook up on the cliff, catches the gunman on the shoulder, pulls him off the cliff.
To his doom. To his demise.
And then I think just goes on fishing.
I'm pretty sure.
Well, if the fish are biting, if the sturgeon are biting, Anderson.
I believe they'd stop biting when a body literally.
You ever heard of a feeding frenzy?
But I mean, that's the kind of thing that happens in film noirs, and you're that's supposed right. to just kind of
go along with it.
Yeah. God, there's a lot of smoking. There's a broken take, or it's not even a broken take. I was reading this. Mitchum was talking about how much he smoked. Like, he just smoked nonstop back then.
Okay.
And there's a scene, and it's in the movie, where he walks in and Kirk Douglas offers him a smoke, and he responds with smoking.
Yeah, he holds up a cigarette. He's already there, brother.
Yeah, and they just continued on with the with the scene. But yeah, that was like in the dialogue. Kirk Douglas's character was supposed to offer him a cigarette, and he was already smoking. But yeah, it's
about that.
It's very tropey in all the best ways.
You know, it's funny.
Like this.
You know what I picked up on? Not the. It's funny you picked up on the smoking because you love smoking so much. Because
I read about it afterwards, there, bud.
Also, did you notice?
You're gonna pick up on a bald thing.
How fucking dare you? Do you ever notice how many drinks Mitchum gets like one or two sips into and just leaves the whole drink?
Yeah.
Like, I'm making a martini. Sure. Dink. There you go.
Yeah.
Gotta go.
That reminds me of something else. There's something out there.
I think there was one drink finished.
I think there was a Benicio movie that we picked up on, and every scene he has like a sip of a drink. Mm. I think it was a Benicio role.
Was it that stupid movie we hated with the fish islands?
Yeah, it might have been.
I think it was.
The Soderbergh movie.
Yeah.
I think he might have been drinking in every... I think that might have been like in his writer or like his contract. Like, I
must
have to be drinking
at all times.
Every single scene. Could be that. Yeah. All right.
Anyway.
Yeah, this is out of the past. I'm glad that I saw it. Every time I can see a movie that's outside my wheelhouse and I can have a better reference, for sure.
Okay.
I still just don't understand. And I got friends that are really, really... Like Greg Sierzewoski. He's probably the most... He probably knows more about movies and like who made them, and you know, he's like a walking encyclopedia. He loves noir, and
it's kind of tickles the same funny bone as like James Bond movies, because maybe. You know you're gonna get this, you know you're gonna get that. They're gonna
That's
the
what
Bond
Jared
girl,
was saying. Like
the gadgets.
If you're in a certain mood, you know exactly what you're gonna get, so you can sit down and have that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I just don't know if I'm ever in the mood for like an adult Scooby Doo, you know, because they're all the same formula.
Yeah.
Some are done better than others. This is a one that's done well, but they all dress the same. They all kind of
talk the same.
Yeah. And there's always a frame up, and there's
always a girl trying to double cross you.
Right. Always.
So someone trying to dry out. I feel like that's a big thing. Somebody's sobering up or strung out. Or
I think Kirk Douglas's character may have at one point. They just didn't lean into it.
Well, you know what?
But he was pretty straight.
The Mitchum character, the whole thing is framed around his new life. Right,
yeah.
He's the gas station owner, and then it becomes, let me tell you about this crazy story back in San Francisco.
Yeah, it's the old trope, like he got out of that life, then he gets sucked back in.
In that structure, that trope, that framework, he's turned his life around and he's left it behind.
He's still having a couple sips, though. You know, what Avery was suggesting is like, is anyone trying to kick the habit?
I'm with you.
He was not kicking any habits. In fact, he was smoking into scenes that he wasn't supposed to be smoking yet. All right, so yeah, that's out of the past, which... Brian said, like, we'll probably both forget what that movie is because of the title when we see the title 10 years from now.
Dumb title,
Six
but
months.
Good movie.
Yeah, good movie.
Would have liked to hang my, build my gallows high.
I'm excited to discuss the end with you here. I don't know if excited is the right word, but I'm eager to.
I can't remember. We'll have to fucking look it up.
There's vital information that's conveyed to one character from another at the end of the movie. Perhaps one of those characters does not speak, Brian. Is this?
Oh, that's right.
And the information is false.
Yeah.
However, it's the question is, does the person who's conveying the information believe that, or are they saying that to be nice? That's the question.
Okay.
And I got nothing. I got nothing from him, even though I tiptoed around, possibly spoiled the movie.
No.
Didn't. His response was, okay. That was his response that he just gave me.
The first pitch in a BlackBerry.
So good. Very sassy man, would you not say?
You sassed him.
I did.
God, I love that movie. I was so sad when my screener link ran out because they gave it to me like for like 4 days, I think. I kept going back. Like, I'm like, oh, I want to watch that scene.
The guy smoking the cigar in the restaurant. That was glorious. them trying to sell the phones.
Yeah. Like, I was fantasizing about being one of the, like, getting that job for like a week. Just go be obnoxious and drink
just
and
be
loud.
A shithead. Yeah,
and they'll all hate you, but they'll want to be you so bad. Yeah. That would be so much fun.
I was great.
BlackBerry, a lot of people, I was just hearing like a year or two ago, a lot of people want their BlackBerries back. There's still a whole bunch of people that miss.
Really?
I was talking to
the buttons.
Who was I talking
to? Fucking stupid.
I miss sending texts and traffic. Oh, I was talking to Joe Dorville. I miss sending texts and traffic between my legs while driving with, you know, without looking. Like I used to,
yeah,
on my flip phone.
All the safety stuff now sucks.
I could send text and I would not take my eyes off the road.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah, you could almost see it in your mind as you're texting. You get the little.
I was so. We all were with the old flip phone. And now with the iPhone.
Now with Siri, it's the game over.
I mean, she's more distracting than anything.
No, you're just dictating your text.
It doesn't work, Brian. Especially with you, I'm
sure. Every text I send you is dictated.
Is it?
No.
You don't send text. You don't respond.
That's true. You got me there.
Brian, we need to know this for the listeners. I need to know. Please let me know. Nothing. He doesn't care.
I feel bad. Hey, tell people who are watching.
The Beastmaster.
Oh, that's right.
Yes. He doesn't care to the point that he doesn't even remember the announcement earlier in the pool.
It was a half an hour ago.
Can't be bothered.
Later this week, we will be discussing...
Watching Beastmaster. Oh,
top five movies based on tech. Technology movies. And that was response to
Black Bear. I'm curious. How wide...
Bless you, buddy. Take a rain check on that.
Excuse me. How wide your net was because a lot of movies are about tech. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Where the main driving force of the movie would be tech.
Shit.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. We're
like the network is probably the best example of it. However, there's an argument that could be made. Social network. An argument could be made that, you know, it's more about relationships and, biography.
That's the argument I came up against every single movie. It's like, this isn't so much about tech as it is about fathers and sons. But I guess I'm digging too deep.
An argument can be made that Her is a prime example. Mm,
true.
Prime. What are we doing? We're giving stuff away.
It's about loneliness.
My number one is pretty goddamn tight. I can tell you. That I can tell you, Brian. It's a great excuse to talk about some movies that maybe I haven't brought up in too
true,
long.
True. Very true. In fact, mine is... I'll let you in a little secret. Mm. Documentaries make an appearance.
Yeah, I got one duck.
All right. Mm-hmm. That's coming up later in the week or immediately after this if you're listening back to back. Thank you, Jared Patrick, for assigning us Out of the Past. We appreciate, first of all, you being an assigner, a Patreon member, a subscriber, but also taking the time to assign us a film we have not seen. Had you heard of Out of the Past?
Yes. I had heard of Out of the Past.
I had not. There you go.
Second, I had forgotten the title, though, I'm sure. But yeah, I was familiar with the Mitchum Out of the Past.
Second Dam is our featured artist.
I should also say Against All Odds was a remake of Out of the Past, 1984. Not much of a better title, but Against All Odds was the 1984 remake Against All Odds.
Wasn't that where that Phil Collins song came from?
I don't know,
bro. Avery, help me out here. Second Dam is the featured artist this week. AndersonandBryan.com is where you go to find information about them.
God, you know what? Jeff Bridges is in a lot of remakes, right?
That's right. What was the one we just talked about?
Spoorloose.
Yes,
Spoorloose. Right? The Vanishing.
King Kong.
King Kong.
True Grit.
Blowout.
True Grit.
What? He's the king.
Jeff Daniels.
Of reboots.
It's got to be more.
Jeff Daniels. I'm talking about Jeff Bridges over here.
Jeff Bridges. It's got to be more.
All right. Tron. Well, he was in the original, but he was also in the reboot.
True. Iron Man. Shit. All right, AndersonandBryan.com is
King
the website.
Kong, good pull.
Anderson Bryan is the Instagram. Anderson and Bryan is the TikTok. The Film Vault on Facebook and Twitter. And if you want to check out our YouTube, The Film Vault Podcast. The Film Vault Podcast.
Eric Kath
killing it over there. Killing it. Thanks also to Mike Cole, the aforementioned Eric Kath, Mitch Burns, and Giovanni. How many Canadians are in there? A lot.
We got a lot of Canadians, yeah.
That's right. This is like a Canadian love letter, this fucking...
Matt Johnson. Yeah. A bit of a Canadian love letter. Yeah. A bit. What the hell? What's going on with IMDb? It continues to just suck. Page unresponsive. IMDb, what happened to you? You guys need to fight. Like maybe Ball Silly came in and took things over? Doesn't give a shit?
Yeah, he canceled movie night.
He did. He canceled. Yeah. He did not give a fuck. Ball Silly did not care who liked... What was he after? Like we still don't quite understand like what his main motivation was. Right?
It was very interesting. There was no backstory. Women in it. There was no like sexy time hookers. Because normally that's all in these kind of movies.
And you don't need that at all. And this movie did not slow down.
Well, I didn't even notice that until...
I think the hockey thing was his, like, you know, his everything.
Yeah.
Like, he was very, they leaned.
But that was, like, he loved hockey for sure.
He was listening to hockey talk in the car.
But it was interesting, the no hookers and blow. That's, I feel like that's in all these movies.
Yeah, you're right. They didn't go down that tropey road.
None of it.
There was no relationships being ruined for long hours. Like, what, just all that stuff. Yeah. And I don't, maybe some people would miss that. I did not at all. I did not miss any of that.
I didn't think about it just now.
Yeah.
I noticed that it wasn't there because I'm like, if I was seeing this in the theater, like, that's usually when I go to the bathroom. It's like when it's like, sorry, honey, I know I've been working late. And it's like, oh, Jesus, here we go.
This movie does not pass the Bechdel test.
Probably does not. Probably does not.
You're here to work on the greatest phone in the world. That's why people.
Oh, so good.
Enjoyable.
Despite the lack of ladies. There are so few ladies.
It's just been abused. It's good that they weren't in here. It was not a lady-friendly environment.
That's true. The one time they focused on a woman, she was being told she had a little penis.
It's true.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Until next time.
We do it for Van Gogh.
Are you struggling to lose weight and keep it off? Tired of wasting time and money on starvation diets that lead to more frustration and stress? If there was a weight loss solution that could actually work for you, would you try it? Then head to Golo.com.
I'm Steve. I lost 138 pounds in 9 months on Golo.
I'm Amber. I've lost 128 pounds with Golo Taking Release.
If you're ready to take back control of your life, head to Golo.com now and see how Golo can work for you. That's Golo.com.
My sleep is way better. My inflammation has gone way down. Golo saved my life. I was way overweight. That's what sent me down the path. I wanted to make sure and live for my kid.
I have literally tried everything. I was on the verge of getting gastric bypass surgery, and I saw the Golo commercial, and it was the last thing I tried because it worked.
Join over 2 million people who have found a better way to lose weight with Golo. Your healthier and happier life begins at Golo.com. That's Golo.com. Again, Golo.com.